We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Hearing Florio writing articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Mike Florio's on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. He of NBC Sports and ProFootballTalk.com joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. We've been consumed with kicker talk, and news is breaking across the league with the Ravens making Justin Tucker very, very, very wealthy.
Boy,
and
funny.
Reportedly now the Niners are not interested in acceding to the demands of Robbie Gould to facilitate a trade. What do you know?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I remember Justin Tucker 3 years ago having a very difficult, ugly, and contentious negotiation with the Ravens when they franchise tagged him. So it tells you how quickly things can change when someone decides to pay a guy. And the 49ers, for now, don't seem to be inclined to pay Robbie Gould what he wants. And most recently, he has said that he wants out of San Francisco. But one of the realities of the collective bargaining agreement, a team can apply that franchise tag to one otherwise free agent every year and squat on him as long as that team wants to, with nothing that the player can do about it other than not show up and not sign the franchise tender and ultimately sit out the full year, if not longer, like we saw Le'Veon Bell do a year ago. So I don't know what's going to happen with Gould, but all it takes is that one moment where a team decides either to put the money on the table or a player decides to take the money that's on the table, and all those hard feelings evaporate.
Would a team really be all that concerned about a 36-year-old kicker who's been doing it for a real long time, not showing up until the last day possible, than just doing the thing he's done for the last decade and a half?
Well, look, it's a kicker, right?
Yeah.
That's all
yeah.
you do. You kick. And the other side of the coin is this. And it's not like the 49ers have to worry about a double doink in the playoffs knocking them out. That would be a great outcome to the season for them. They got bigger issues. It seems like every key player on the team is recovering from a torn ACL. Kickers are everywhere. Kickers are anywhere. Kickers can be found. Bring in three or four of them and let them kick for the job, right? Make it like Glengarry Glen Ross. The winner gets a set of steak knives and the loser gets fired. I mean, if you can't perform under those circumstances, or let me flip it around, if you can perform under those circumstances, chances are you can perform once you have the job. And if you don't perform when you have the job, you get fired and you bring in somebody else. It's the most fungible position in football, other than maybe long snapper. And that's why, you look, hey, when you have a good one, you hang on to him. When you don't have a good one, you keep looking until you find a good one. And you don't give that guy much leash before you decide to move on to the next one.
Is it still generally true that NFL teams believe that kickers should be just kick and not be seen or heard? Because when I look at it, Mike, Robbie Gould is just a big presence. He's a big personality. He was in this town. He was getting in locker room disagreements that the press overheard. He was the union rep, and the Bears have had a reputation of not being real friendly to union reps in general. A lot big social media presence. And then when Cody Parkey goes on the Today Show and Matt Nagy says that was more of a me thing instead of a we thing, doesn't that inform the way most teams think about their kicker?
Most teams do think that. I remember when Bill Parcells became the VP of football operations in Miami 11 years ago, the first order of business was to get rid of Jay Feely, who was not bashful about speaking his mind and not bashful about union activities and not inclined to do what most coaches think kickers should do, which is kick and then get the hell out of here. And now there's still a place for a guy who's skilled. There will be an organization out there that will embrace a guy and not worry about the fact that he likes to do more than just simply kick footballs. But I'd say that traditional, stereotypical, old-school coaching mindset is that kickers and punters and long snappers, mainly kickers and punters, because at least a long snapper has to throw a block from time to time, but kickers and punters are a different breed altogether than the real football players. And if they try to act like the real football players, we're going to find a kicker or a punter who will act like we expect a kicker and punter to act. I mean, I think that was the source of a lot of friction in Indianapolis between Pat McAfee and GM Ryan Grigson, that McAfee was a free spirit who did his own thing and said his own thing and spoke his mind, and Grigson, an old school guy that didn't like that, and eventually they McAfee decided to walk away at the same time Grigson got fired, but I think it poisoned McAfee's relationship with the team to have that constant stress coming from a guy who thinks that McAfee should have just been quiet and kicked the football.
So the rumors coming out of the Raiders are that they may have a surprise pick lined up for number four.
Surprise to them, too, possibly.
They're picking a kicker. Right,
they're
going to take a kicker. The rumors at all. So has Gruden and Mayock going into conclave worked or not worked? What the hell are they doing?
Here's the thing. It would not be unprecedented for a John Gruden-coached Raiders team to take a kicker in the first round. They did it 19 years ago with Sebastian Janikowski. Although at number four, that would be a stretch. Here's what I think the Raiders could do that would constitute a surprise. Taking a quarterback to the average casual fan would come off as a surprise. If you've been following the situation more closely, you won't be surprised because there's been that glimmer of something suggesting that John Gruden isn't sold on Derek Carr, even though he's under contract for this year at $20 million with that fully guaranteed. They'd have to find a trade partner for Derek Carr if they were to go quarterback. I think it'll be a surprise if Kyler Murray's there at four. And I think that's the guy Gruden would like to get. But I think the surprise would be Dwayne Haskins, the Ohio State quarterback at number four. I think that's what they're trying to keep concealed if they're contemplating that. And my theory on clearing the building of all the area scouts, right, in a normal functioning football operation, the area scouts don't know what the draft board looks like anyway. But I think Gruden is so inclined to talk. And I think that they got those guys out to protect Gruden from going door to door, bouncing the ideas off of these scouts, just so, number one, he could hear himself articulate his thoughts, and number two, he could see how they react to what he's thinking about doing, because he doesn't have that deep-seated confidence that I think you need in what you're planning to do, because he's feeling so much pressure to justify the Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper trades. But that would be the surprise for me, Dwayne Haskins at number four to the Oakland Raiders. And it's important for them to keep their mouths shut, because the Jets are making it clear to anyone and everyone they're willing to trade out of number three. So if you have an inkling what the Raiders are going to do and you want that guy, you have the team right in front of the Raiders that you can do a deal with and cut the Raiders off at getting the guy they want.
Something I've been thinking about that I wanted to dial back a little bit. The Cardinals have the number one pick. They drafted a quarterback last year with their number one pick. They get a new coach. It shocked everybody that they even hired this guy as the new coach. The new coach may want somebody else, the latest shiny new thing, as his quarterback. So they would be willing to deal the quarterback they drafted last year for less than what his value might be, pennies on the dollar. In any other business, in anywhere else, we would look at these things outside of the context of the NFL, we would think that's insane. Absolutely, completely insane to, as far as valuation, as far as risk calculus. Why do we just shrug and go, they might do that?
Well, I mean, here's the thing, though. Because of the change in the way that rookies are paid, and that change came in 2011 with the CBA that dramatically reduces what goes out to the players at the top of the draft, the risk of swinging and missing on a potential transformational type player who will become the next big thing in the NFL, the risk of not taking that guy, I think, is greater than the risk of taking him and having him not work out. And if you have the next Mahomes Mayfield on deck in Murray and you don't take him and he ends up being the guy that everyone talks about in 2019 or 2020, whenever he makes it onto the field, that's a huge thing for a team like the Cardinals that was right on the fringe of having a strong national following, as crazy as that sounded. We'd have never thought the Cardinals would be a team that would be a national draw. They were there. NFC Championship game, consistent contenders, a lot of buzz, a lot of sizzle, some high-profile and engaging players. Now they could use a Kyler Murray. And so, yeah, in the NFL, it makes sense if this is what they do. And I continue to believe that Murray is the guy unless and until there are multiple credible reports from big-name reporters saying that the Cardinals are going in a different direction, because Cliff Kingsbury is going to know what the pick is, and he's going to tell his agent, Eric Burkhardt, who also represents Kyler Murray, and since Murray's in Nashville and he's going to be at the draft, you can't have Murray experience that moment of, oh, crap, it's not Murray. You need to get the word out ahead of time that it's not Murray, unless Murray is prepared to pack up his bag and leave Nashville. I mean, I'd said last week, if Murray doesn't go to Nashville, that's the sign he's not number one. Now that he's there, I think the only practical way to deal with it is to get the word out that he's not number one. And I don't buy Cliff Kingsbury saying yesterday they don't know who the pick is. Look, if you don't know who the pick is 2 days before the draft, you got far bigger problems than who your pick is going to be, because you need to know 48 hours. You've been on the clock for 4 months. If you don't know by now, you're never going
to
know.
Sounds like Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers are somewhat close to a deal. Can we expect something near the Russell Wilson benchmark, or is that going to be a little different since Roethlisberger is Roethlisberger?
Well, you know, the deal is done, but the numbers aren't out yet. And the last time Roethlisberger did a new deal, the numbers didn't come out right away. And it created speculation that maybe he didn't get a great deal, but he ultimately did. He's just very circumspect about letting that information out there publicly. And I think when we see the numbers, he's going to be somewhere between Matt Ryan at $30 million a year and Aaron Rodgers at $33.5 million a year. It's only a two-year extension, which means it's a three-year contract. And I think 3 years, you know, $90 to $96 million makes sense for the ultimate outcome of this deal. And the extension then, the value of it would be, and let me be more accurate, the extension will be worth $60 to $64 million, so the new money average looks great. He's already due to make $17 million this year, so the total value, I'd say, will be between 25 and 30. The extension will be between 30 and 32, something like that. And, you know, he retires with the Steelers, and, you know, then they have to worry about finding their next quarterback, because they went 20 years between Bradshaw and Roethlisberger, and even though they made it to a Super Bowl somehow, they saw the value, as you guys are seeing the value of having a potential franchise quarterback. It changes everything when you have a guy that can thrust you into contention each and every year.
Mike Florio, thank you.
See you guys.
Mike Florio brought to you by Goodwill. Every time you shop at Goodwill, you wield the power to put people to work. Every purchase enables Goodwill to help someone develop a resume, learn interview skills, or get a job. You shop, they train people, work. Visit AmazingGoodwill.com for a Goodwill store near you. Midday Midway comes your way next. I have a brand new mainstream candy bar that is about to make its debut, and I think because of its flavor profile, it will play well in Chicago. Okay. The guys from the I'm Fat podcast weigh in on that. And while we're speaking of eating, how big a meal is too big a meal for a 4,500-pound great white shark?
I think he can eat whatever he wants,
nope,
can't he?
Apparently not.
Ah, I see. Okay, dangerous meals for ancient humans, and another company taking things from you digitally. I'm telling you, we're close to the end times. Midday Midway's on the way. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Talked about Robbie Gould's trade request and Robbie Gould's weird history with the Bears, having called out Virginia McCaskey in ways that he shouldn't, and David Haw wrote about it 8 years ago, and now the Niners say that they don't want to trade him, and this is while Justin Tucker is getting ridiculous amounts of money
well
from the
guaranteed.
Ravens. Also heard from Ryan Pace as he talked about Bears' draft strategy. They will be paying attention to every pick that's made, despite having to wait until number 87, and we had all sorts of football thoughts from Mike Florio as well.
On the Midday Midway, I always like to keep you up to date with the latest pieces of technology that are either stealing your soul or your reputation or your actual money. This is from The Post. A New York man has filed a $1 billion lawsuit against Apple, claiming the tech giant's facial recognition software wrongly blamed him for stealing from Apple stores. Usmani Ba, he's 18 years old, claims someone used a stolen ID to pass themselves off as him when they were busted stealing $1,200 worth of merchandise from an Apple store in Boston late May. The ID listed his name, address, and other personal information, but did not include a photo. So Bob believes that Apple took the perp at his word, then programmed its security systems to recognize the man's face as Boz. Let me work you through this in case you're missing it. The perp tells Apple that I'm Bob. Apple goes, okay, you're this guy. Now they believe that the perp is actually Ba, the guy who didn't do anything. The thief then ripped off the Apple stores in Jersey, Delaware, and Manhattan. Incidents Ba was all blamed for, the suit claims. He only learned about the mix-up after receiving a summons from Boston Municipal Courts in June. He was arrested by the NYPD in November. Detectives working the case found the footage from the store, found out that the thief looks absolutely nothing like Bob.
Was he chosen just because of opportunity?
It's tough to tell exactly why he was in and around. Apple's use of facial recognition software in its stores to track individuals suspected of theft is the type of Orwellian surveillance that consumers fear. That per the lawsuit, and I could not agree more. Do you have the facial recognition turned on your phone?
I do.
I turned that off. And I know they've probably got it elsewhere. I know that they probably have my mugs stored somewhere on a digital server. But for that brief moment when I turned it off, I felt like little was like sticking it to the man. It felt good.
You're almost off the grid a little bit. The pictures that accompany the story are amazing, but it's exactly what you think. A mammoth great white shark choked to death on a giant sea turtle. There is a fisherman in the Pacific Ocean named Greg Vella. He posted the pictures. They estimate the shark's weight at 4,500 pounds.
Same.
Massive.
And the discovery came a day after Vella heard chatter on his radio about a great white shark swimming around with a giant sea turtle in its mouth. So people started to joke about it. I didn't pay it any more attention. The next day, it was found dead with the turtle still jammed in its jaws extended as the
as
the lamniform sharks can. They push them out. Unbelievable. It did indeed choke on the sea turtle. And what surprised me, I didn't know, generally, great white sharks go after much softer prey. They generally prefer seals, sea lions, you know, those, that's
people.
People or other fish. You know, not people, not really. That's a misrepresentation. Tiger sharks.
They go after
people. Tiger sharks eat sea turtles because they have teeth that are much better designed to consume sea turtles. They have adapted and they have evolved as the primary turtle eater among the large predatory sharks because they've got teeth that are shaped in a way that they can consume them better, while the great white does not. The great white has flesh-tearing teeth, triangular flesh-tearing teeth. Tiger sharks don't. They've got more of these, more sawing aspects to their teeth rather than just ripping chunks. And this is these are two enormous animals. But it's hard to imagine to picture a 4,500 pound dead great white shark. It's a boat. I mean, it's a tugboat lying there on the dock.
More scary animals or insects in this case. The CDC says the blood-sucking kissing bug, Triatoma sanguisuga, has been confirmed in Delaware.
Who's your guy?
For the first time.
Guy,
he's good in space. He has oily feet.
Triatoma sanguisuga.
So the kissing bug is a blood-sucking creature that feeds on animals and humans. It has a particular fondness for biting faces.
Oh, lovely. Now,
while the bites themselves are not necessarily dangerous, the bugs can transmit a parasite that causes Chagas disease. You know Chagas disease?
I don't.
I read up real quickly during the break. Apparently, it's a disease that enlarges all of the blood vessels and aorta around your heart. So it's a heart stopper. It'll put an end to you. Yeah. They are now in Delaware. They've never been in Delaware before. Ever before. Photographs were sent to Texas A&M. They tested the bugs, and they are now in the United States. So we've got another invasive species that's kissing faces and causing Chagas disease. So now we learned about two different
new
things.
New bug, new disease.
Yeah, it's great.
Awesome.
Go Bears!
All awesome. Great kinds of stuff.
Great. Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats playoff hockey in Chicago. Catch the Central Division champion Chicago Wolves as they battle Grand Rapids in the first round of the Calder Cup playoffs. For up-to-date playoff information or tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com. We've got a new candy bar, and this has been available in Japan for some time, but not here.
Hmm.
Kit Kat. is unveiling something new as Hershey has announced. This is a new permanent flavor. Mint dark chocolate.
I'm in.
Kit Kat Duos. It's the signature wafer covered in mint cream on top and dark chocolate on the bottom. I also am in. Before, the only choices to pick from were milk chocolate, dark chocolate, or white chocolate, occasionally limited edition flavor like red velvet for Valentine's Day. But this is permanent. This is Kit Kat Duo. And here's why I think it plays well in Chicago. Frango mints. I don't know if you grew up with Frango mints, was when Marshall Fields had their signature chocolate mint melt-away, which was a thing. You have to keep them in the refrigerator for just a little bit to extend the melting time. It's sort of like an unexploded bomb with a liquid nitrogen.
Make
sure it's just perfect. But I'm also a huge fan of the Andes rectangular after-dinner mints.
Andes, they were a client of my dad's back when we were kids.
Really?
So there were, just whole columns, rows of Andes, like in the car, in the fridge. They were everywhere. That was the best year and a half of childhood, probably. they were everywhere.
All right, so let's say the I'm Fat podcast weighing in on these mint dark chocolate Kit Kats, yay or nay?
Yeah, I'll give those a try.
All right.
Yeah, the thin mints, one of my favorite things in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Mint meltaways, as you mentioned, mint meltaways. I think the wafer element will be interesting, but I'm definitely trying that.
That does give it a thin mint-like quality to it.
Kind of. Trying to cramp the Girl Scout style.
They're encroaching on the market. Are you guys frozen Kit Kat guys? Because for me, the thin mint needs to be thrown into the freezer. Preferably overnight, and that's how I like to eat my Thin Mints. I like the Twix frozen. I like a frozen Snickers. I've never been a frozen Kit Kat guy. I don't know if this needs freezing or not.
I've never tried it, but I've noticed a lot lately. I don't know if companies are changing their formula for chocolate, but it melts so quickly. Huh. If you're holding a Kit Kat in your fingers, 10, 15 seconds, you've got chocolate on your fingers. I don't know what it is.
Are you holding it with two hands?
Well, you hold it with two fingers. Pinch it between. You pinch the wafer between. But chocolate's melting faster than ever. And I'm not eating it any slower. That's definitely not the case.
Is this like the juiced ball?
Yeah, kind of.
That's what it sounds like here.
The I'm Fat juiced ball.
Yeah, and texters weighing in, yes, and no, Frangos were not dark chocolate. They were not.
Huh. Oh, this thing, the candy shops in Chinatown that have 25 to 30 Kit Kat flavors.
Yes,
yeah, I guess
you can import. It's Asian Kit Kat flavors have been much more advanced.
There's like a green tea flavor, all this, all that weird kind of stuff.
Like
friends
a mochi.
Bring them back. Yeah, something like that. They were interesting. They were pretty good. Oh, and yes, from the 815, frozen Charleston chews.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yes, that's the way to do it. Speaking of eating stuff, a 1,500-year-old chunk of fossilized human fecal matter was found at a former rock shelter in Texas, and it contains evidence.
A former rock shelter?
Yes, a rock shelter, shelter made out of rocks.
A cave.
Didn't he produce a morning show here?
Rock shelter? No, a cave would be like a natural formation. A rock shelter would be something made by humans.
To shelter rocks?
No, to shelter the humans.
Okay.
Quick, get these rocks inside the shelter.
Right.
We can't have them exposed to
the elements.
Weather.
They are elements. Okay, so they found something.
So it's a rock shelter in Texas, and it contains evidence of an ancient hunter-gatherer who consumed an entire rattlesnake, including a fang. This is proof that Bill Brasky existed and lived 1,500 years ago. Archaeologists have never seen anything like it. Back in the late 60s, archaeologists collected over 1,000 samples of human-produced coprolites. That's right on fecal matter. At the shelter.
Salute to coprolites.
You're welcome. A team led by Texas A&M University took a look at it, and they're thinking, can you imagine?
Second Texas A&M reference that we've had. Very involved in the midday midway.
All about the Aggies. Can you come up with a reason that these archaeologists have come up with for why a human would have eaten an entire rattlesnake?
Ritual? Some sort of some sort of belief that there would be power imbued, much like even today there are certain cultures that consume cobra and cobra organs of various
kinds.
They
are thinking exactly that, Dan Bernstein.
Not a between meal snack.
It was not a between meal snack. It was not fraternity hazing. It was some sort of ritual or ceremony, and not for the nutrition. Because I imagine if you're eating a rattlesnake, you're not eating the whole thing plus the fangs and the poison.
The meat's good. I've had rattlesnake, and the meat's really good.
Well, what's it?
It's like chicken.
Or flaky?
Frog legs. Yeah, it's just a very tasty, mild white meat. It's really good.
Have you had gator? Is it similar?
I have had gator. It's lighter in texture than gator tail. What I've had gator tail, I've had the gator chunks that have been kind of toothsome. It was much flakier, lighter in texture, but very very similar to a thick thigh meat, the quad of a frog leg.
No, Jay had a gator, not just the tail.
ate it head to tail,
like the sea turtle kind of thing. Yeah. Trying to just eat it. That's the Midday Midway, and we do it around, I don't know, 10:25 or so at the midpoint of the show. We've got baseball to discuss ahead of Len Casper at 11. We've moved some things around this week. Len is going to join us today at 11. That's because Theo Epstein will join us at 11 o'clock tomorrow, and we're going to move up Who's Your Guy tomorrow.
That's right.
Today we're doing Who's Your Guy, preparing for the draft and having fun with draft erotica at 11:20, and tomorrow we're going to do it at 10. So that way, 10 o'clock tomorrow, you know, just because we clear the decks for Theo Epstein, a reaction to stuff that Theo Epstein says, so we're going to do that. But some baseball things. Our experience at the ballpark yesterday.
Yes, you and I shared a ball game together last night. Jose Quintana had a hell of an evening. And Javi Baez, was he in or out of the base paths? You can decide next. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
Seager swings and misses, strike three. Good breaking ball by Quintana.
We needed that kind of performance tonight. They have a very difficult lineup to navigate, and he was once again on top of his game. Great focus. Kept coming back with good pitches. Really, we talked about it also, the curveball is very pertinent tonight. And then some good changeups to go with the fastball. He's pitching. He's absolutely pitching right now, where in the past I thought he would just pretty much rely on his fastball. He's becoming a pitch maker with all this stuff now, and he's doing a nice job with it.
A pertinent curveball was seen from Jose Quintana, according to Joe Maddon. Even though Joe Maddon had a long night dealing with Ted Barrett behind the plate.
Oh,
and
man, was he yelling and screaming.
Look, it was a bad strike zone both ways. It was inconsistent both ways,
yes.
at weird times, and that's because Ted Barrett's old and doesn't see very well. And you notice I hadn't seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
And...
yeah, you mentioned this when we were there at the game last night. Thanks to the higher-ups for sending us there.
Yeah,
a nice
thanks
little evening.
For providing the tickets. The umpires did like a little pregame group hug prayer prep thing.
Did you hear them? Did
no.
you hear what was said?
I didn't hear them invoking our Dark Lord Satan.
That was the thing. They were.
I don't know.
Cthulhu is coming. We're all very interested. Oh, they had a ball game tonight. Has anyone seen my contacts?
Drawing a pentagram in the ground to say invoke Lucifer, like anything. Our guy Aleister Crowley we talked about yesterday.
Right.
But no,
they
just had a little thing. Like, I don't know. God grants us the serenity to not screw anything up tonight.
It's weird that you saw that because when I ducked out in the, for whatever inning it was that Jose Quintana had the comebacker drilled at his noggin, that inning, it was the fifth?
That was a whole play, dude.
So I ducked out to grab a beer and a glass of wine for you.
Thank you.
And, well, I owed you. And I'm in line, and next to me is a priest.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, we're really close to a joke here. I am really, can there be a rabbi around anywhere, a priest, a rabbi,
probably.
And an atheist walk up to a bar? Like, we're really close to that joke. So we're watching, and the game's going on. And to my left, I'm watching Quintana. I'm watching a bunch of good curveballs get flipped up there. By the way, curveball usage, way up for Quintana this month over last, and the last two over his last handful, last like 3-4 months last season. Changeup usage, like tripled. That kind of stuff. You know, he talked about it in spring training. That has made him a much, much better pitcher, or helped make him a much better pitcher. So we see the comeback get hit. Everybody, you know, it's a couple of seconds ahead on the TV monitor. The crowd goes wild. I hear it. I watch it. I go, oh, bleep.
Right.
And I got a look from the priest. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. That's my bad. So I get up there. I was like second in line. I get my beer. I get the wine. And I have to walk in front of the priest.
Mm-hmm.
To what this is like seconds. It's all just like right there. Oh, bleep. Turn. Look. Cut in front of the priest to walk away. And I go, excuse me, Father. I've sinned.
Is it forgive me?
I didn't get
you
much.
Said, said, excuse me. I didn't, forgive me.
I
okay.
didn't get a. Yeah, except because I was just cutting in front of the guy.
Forgive me, Father. I'm a penis.
I really felt bad. It was right in his head, though. Like, I don't know how to react to that.
Did he give you a look? Did he give you?
It was no. It was kind of. It was like a look. It was like a look. It was like. It was very much not a. Well, we're at a baseball game.
Exactly.
It's okay.
You're at a baseball game.
You're standing in line at the bar. I mean, we all know what we're up to here. Have a nice night. Enjoy a libation.
Yeah, and the food's gotten better. It really has.
Yeah, what did you wolf down in the ninth?
Whatever that it was a burger in a bag. It was the coolest thing. They give you fries, and then they wrap up the burger, and they set the burger right on top of the fries in a bag, in like a wax paper bag.
So did you get the?
So it keeps everything warm, and it's you don't have to mess with the box thing. You don't have you just grab it and they idiot proof it.
Was the burger insulated from the fries?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It was separately wrapped.
So I thought it'd be all right if you got some of the burger drippings into the fries.
Well, you can open it.
But
you can set it right there if you want to, but it made it so easy. Rather than giving you this wrapped in this and this set in this and the cardboard thing you got to open up, it's like, all right, bag of burger and fries. Thank you so much.
It sounded like you were describing a walking taco but a burger.
No, it was not that. It was not like the open Cheetos container with a dollop of chili thrown in there.
I want it to be that.
Sorry. You can make it that. This segment is brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com. I've watched the Javier Baez play over and over again. He jumps out of the baseline.
He gets 3 feet from his established path. That's the letter of the law. As you're running, it doesn't necessarily matter where you start running. You can be a little inside, you can be a little outside. They're willful on that. But you get 3 feet from your established path. We had a great view of, you had a great view of it, and so did the other two to my left sitting down there. But I had Ted Barrett right in the way.
Oh.
So I'm looking down the basement. All I see is Ted Barrett, who is apparently, according to our texters, an ordained minister. So thanks, texters, for looking that up.
Is that right?
That's what our texters say. They're always right.
It must be a prayer conclave of some kind.
It must be. Or they're just going over the rules again.
No,
all right, fellas, now
it was
this is baseball. We're doing baseball tonight. Remember to call the balls and strikes as best you can.
Ah, yes, the balls and strikes. What about the outs and the safes?
Don't worry about those. Ted's got those. So I'm watching, and Javi is completely obscured by home plate umpire Ted Barrett. So all I saw was umpire, and then suddenly Baez emerges from in front of the umpire and then back in front of the umpire to get to first base. It was incredible. I mean, that kind of athleticism, that's Javi being Javi, I guess. I think he's out of the base path.
I thought he was out of the base. It happened so quickly. So you're saying by law, by the actual written baseball rule, regardless of where you are relative to a white line that's down there, the inside or the outside, the primary or the secondary line, it is your established path from which you cannot deviate.
Yes. Oh, these are not the MLB rules. Yeah, you get 3 feet one way or the other, and that is kind of the established. Here we go. In running the last half of the distance from home to first, when the ball is being fielded first, you get 3 feet. That's where that extra line is, the one on the right-hand side. And that's the distance you're allowed to avoid tags or a fielder coming into play, a pitcher, you know, running over. You know, that's what you get.
It was pretty close to being more than 3 feet with his double jump cut. You said it's a Euro step. It's all it is.
It really is. It felt like a Euro step.
Baseball Euro step. You noticed a couple things that was pretty cool, too, because your observational skills at baseball games are beyond reproach.
Watched a lot of baseball.
It was noting the number of times Wilson Contreras still pops up to not make a throw. That he jumps up to threaten to throw.
Yeah.
In a way that may give away a strike.
With a runner on second, too, it was glove side to right-handers where he just kind of, I don't know whether it was fastballs that were making him run back in toward the hitter or, you know, because Quintana did have, in that third inning, got a little loose with fastball command, was a little high and a little inside against a couple of right-handers and did a great job narrowing it back down and getting himself back into because he got Peterson on a high fastball a little later. Got another strikeout on a high fastball. I think that was Justin Turner, too. So, you know, you saw him get it back into command. But Contreras just lets that ball take him behind the right-handed hitter with a runner on second base.
Right.
And I got to imagine that he's, you know, pumping the throw, that he gets up there and, like, thrower's motion, almost like a quarterback, because he's got the big C like a catcher does with your arm. I got to think that he's doing that because he's there, not because he wants to throw. Just because I've gone all the way here, I might as well make it look like I'm gonna.
So the pitch takes him into that opportunity rather than letting him be quiet back there and hold it there.
I'd rather have him watch Francisco Cervelli and watch him go from low to high and set that kind of stuff up, or try and bring things back across a little bit. Just be quiet, be soft, let the pitch do some of the work. But Contreras is back there and active, probably not as active as ever, but active like he usually is.
A texter for the 219 says, MLB said last night, you have 3 feet from the tagger, not from the line. And if the fielder doesn't reach to tag you, then no 3 feet rule.
It's 3 feet from, no, it's your established base path that you have to run in. And then you get 3 feet. I don't think it's from the tagger. I think it's from the base to make a move.
This is like a hockey question at this
point. Yeah, we can't. Don't ask an open-ended hockey question.
You noticed something else, too, that I thought was really cool.
Hmm.
And that was how specific and repeatable the mechanics of Jose Quintana are, not just to the eye. It isn't just the metronomic delivery and repeatable delivery that he has and always had when he came up with the White Sox.
Yeah.
The classic Don Cooper, stay tall, stay back, stay closed. You said, look at the marks on the mound.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite things of I'd go to Sunday games. It was Sunday day games where Quintana was, you get the bright sun at guaranteed rate and the whole thing. It's just a real nice summer day. And Quintana's out there, and as he walks up to the mound, because he's pitching first, he's throwing, and there'll be, because he'd usually walk up the back of the mound, there'll be two marks on the front, just two marks, land leg, trail leg, each and every time in the same spot.
Sometimes the mound is a mess when guys pitch.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get guys, your feet sliding around all over the
place. Yeah, you watch like a Jake Peavy start or something, or another different quality of pitchers.
You watch Roy Oswalt was like that.
Matt Latos was all over the place when he'd land and try and drag. And you can, it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't pitch if you're kind of all over the place. It's just it takes a higher degree of athleticism through your delivery to keep things repeatable and throw strikes. Quintana is just this, when he's on, things just all click in rhythm. It's really impressive.
It's like watching a golfer in some ways in his routine. I mean, there's a pristine economy of movement. And I hadn't seen the evidence of it. I knew it was there. It just, you showed me it. Visual evidence of it that I hadn't appreciated before, and that was very cool. Meanwhile, what is going on Twitter here? Parkins has started a big fight.
What did he do to you?
We got Shane Reardon. Everybody making fun of me. We were talking about eating rattlesnake during the midday midway, and somebody said, what does it taste like? And I compared it to frog legs, and Parkins like, no, none of your audience is going to know, because nobody knows what frog legs taste like. 98% of your audience never had a frog leg. So now Shane is pushing back, saying that frog legs are not that exotic, and the comp is accurate, and
I'm with Parkins.
Okay. I don't know that I've ever had a frog leg. I might have, but I don't remember it.
Like, that's not maybe a top 1% thing, but a top, 5 to 10% thing.
It's not an expensive food.
I was just going to ask.
It's not
an
uncommon food.
Dan, I hate to agree with you ever, but I'm agreeing with you. They're not that exotic. They're at Uncle Julio's, for God's sake.
They're everywhere. Yeah, listen for them. They're outside your house. They're at every golf course everywhere. They're bullfrogs, for God's sake.
They're not that good, but they're also not that exotic.
I think a well prepared. And I've had different kinds that are some good, some bad. There's a Thai version.
Like different kinds of frogs or different.
I think
prepared
so. Yeah.
Frog legs.
Yeah, like if you go to Sticky Rice and get their frog legs, I don't think it's a bullfrog. It might be a leopard frog or something else because it's much smaller. It's the whole lower body. And I've had bullfrog legs where it's so big that each one is almost like a chicken drumstick.
So wait, are we gigging local frogs here and then frying those up, or are we shipping frogs in from other exotic locales? What am I eating?
I think both, depending on what you're allowed to do. I don't know that there. I don't know what the frog gigging rules in Illinois are.
I don't think there are any.
I'm sure there are.
On gigging frogs? I thought that's our. It's the last realm of freedom, and it's gone.
Oh, stop it. Len Casper has thoughts on the Cubs. He's straight ahead. Keep it here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.